Hey, it's December 17th, 1999. It's about 10 to 11. We're at the Homeless Services Center talking to
Pamela Lee.
And Pamela, you're a disabled person in a wheelchair, and you've got some concerns.
Mainly with the accessibility of getting to the Army or the church groups. A lot of times the lifts don't work. I've been told not to take my manual wheelchair on the bus, that they would have one sitting at the Armory for me that is in bad disrepair. Bathrooms being locked, not being able to get to the bathrooms. Just a lot of problems. Purposely keeping people separated because of personal reasons.
Talking about couples, for example?
Yes. And the main thing, mainly, is being accessibility.
The women's church groups, 90% of them are non-accessible to her in a wheelchair, but they want her to be on that group, in a women's group.
Bathrooms aren't accessible. There's no showers. They treat me very well. It's just they have no control over the situation. It's the people in the main house who make these decisions, and they're not out there, they don't see the problems, and they're not being realistic about it. And it's very difficult.
Have you spoken to Ken Cole or any people in authority here at the Homeless Services Center about this?
We've talked to a few people, and we've gotten nowhere.
Ken Cole, Jeremy, and Miguel.
And your name is?
Timothy Spires.
Timothy, how long ago did you speak to them about this?
I speak to them once a week, and then I go away for a week, and the problem is still not resolved. This has been ongoing for 6 weeks.
How many times would you estimate you've talked to them?
Four times.
Four times. And does this affect other people as well that you know of who are also disabled?
Yeah. And it also accepts, it affects the morale, you know, because they label you a troublemaker. They'll start up gossips about you and make it like you're the bad guy trying to make everything difficult for everybody else.
You're talking about certain staff members?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Or are you talking about people in the group themselves?
It would definitely be staff members.
Have you expressed your concern about those staff members' behavior to their superiors and suggested that perhaps it would be best if they, you know, didn't blame the victims?
Well, I left that up to Tim, because Tim knows these people better than I do, and you know, he knows how to talk to them. I don't know them very well. They did an interview in the Sentinel on me last year where they misquoted me, and it caused quite an uproar. And
how did they misquote you?
I said the words they said, but not in the order that they were put in the paper. The only thing they got totally correct was what I said about my kids and wanting to find a home and be, you know, a family.
So they gave a misimpression that led people to think that was wrong.
That I was like a snitch or something and was causing trouble for people on purpose, and that was not my intent. I was trying to make things easier for people here, you know, telling other people that, you know, they really need help with donations and, you know, the accessibility thing, and, you know, just not everybody wants to be here, but some of us have no choice.
You know? How long have you been using these services?
Off and on since last year. I've been homeless for 13 months now.
And where are you from, Santa Cruz, or from somewhere else?
I was priced out of an apartment here in Santa Cruz.
And how long have you been in that apartment?
6 years.
Wow. So you're not some person who's rushed into town to use the wonderful Armory shelter services?
No, I didn't even know it existed, really. I read about the Back 40 when it was around in the newspaper, but I really didn't know a whole lot about it. And I had never had any need of their services before.
What do you want to say?
Yes, the question I have for the board of directors down here is, why do they have known intravenous drug users and racist people on the payroll here, known on this lot to have them abused and to be doing them things? Why they're not drug testing people if they're hiring them from here?
You have any specific Have you made any specific complaints about particular individuals around this practice?
As far as the racism, yes, I have.
Yeah. And, who do you feel?
Not this year, this, not just this winter, but last winter when he was hired.
And what was the response to your complaint?
The response was, well, I don't have proof, but the majority of people that know the main person that's in control right now that has some views, he has been here for 10 years and his views have been well spoke on this lot. Now he's in a managerial position with the armory and this lot.
Are we talking about Papa John?
Yes, we are.
So your concern is that Papa John may not be treating people of color fairly?
Yes, and the fact is they tell me they don't want to get into personalities when I mention it.
Do you have any particular instances that concern you, or are you just talking about general attitude and comments?
Both of the above, but a particular incident is that the first day he was put on to the church, onto the armory last year, it was all of a sudden a problem about TVs going up to the armory, specifically mine, when we've been doing them all the years that the armory was there.
You had your own television with you?
He lost that battle. 2 mornings later, I had a portable boom box. He asked me to turn up loud as he could in the morning because he couldn't get people up, and then he walked into the military people's office, and when he came out, it was like they said we couldn't play it anymore after we had been playing it countless morning after that.
So you're suggesting he set you up by urging you to play it loudly and then complaining about it?
I know he did, and I had confirmation of that from one other monitor that was trying to be anonymous in it. He's no longer a monitor.
Did you take this complaint to Director Ken Cole or any of his subordinates?
Ken Cole was not here at the time. Karen Gillette was. And their position is, as long as you don't have proof, and if it's a personality thing you got going, then they don't want to hear it.
Has there been any repetition of this kind of behavior that's caused you concern in this year?
Last week, when we were up at the armory, I specifically spoke to a Sergeant Pacer about the porch and smoking, because I don't always have help up and down off the porch. And I was told it was okay if I stayed at the very end of the porch and smoked there, but no one else could. I would have to tell them, you know, I had special consideration because of the wheelchair, and that they would have to leave the porch. And
what is your ailment that leaves you in a wheelchair?
I have chronic disc degeneration, I have lupus, I have osteoporosis, scoliosis, and arthritis, and neurological damage from a surgery that didn't go quite right. It wasn't the doctor's fault. They found a large tumor in the nerve stem and tried to remove it and cause some damage.
But you're got to use a wheelchair to get around.
Yes, I've been in a wheelchair for 4 years.
So you were at the end of the porch smoking because this really was the only way you could get a smoke under those circumstances, but others not allowed to do that because, what, there'd be too many people doing it or something?
That, and they were physically able to walk off and on the porch. But as soon as I had left Sergeant Pacer's office, Papa John went right into the office right afterwards to talk to the same sergeant, and I guess I got him there because he came out and was humble and said that there was no problem with me being on the porch, but no one else could. But I had to tell people that they couldn't stay on the porch.
The morning before, he threatened to not allow her to come up for smoking on the porch when the previous winter she had already got it okay to smoke on the porch. This is an extension not only from now, but last winter.
And did you present, are you concerned about this to Ken Cole or other people who work here?
No, because I'm trying not to make waves and not to have...
The general attitude now is when we come here and we make waves and we keep problems going in that house. I've had 3 different employees stress that to me. I had one employee say that another employee said it to them as well.
The client of the shelter told me this morning to be very careful about what I said or did because I was being watched at all times.
By authorities or by other clients?
Other clients here at the shelter, and if there's authorities, they're not going to find anything.
When I met Pam Lee last winter, there was an article in the Sentinel that gave a bad light on her being here, and as a result, no monitor wanted to help her onto the van in the church group. No monitor wanted to help her off, and they had in essence refused her from getting on the church group last winter. That's where I came in and started assisting her, and we stayed at the Armory all winter long last winter. Now when we got back here this winter, they told us that we could not stay at the Armory. They forced me to go on a women's group one night with her. The second night I refused to, and they told me, well, I can, Papa John said point blank, you cannot get on the Armory. If you don't go to the women's church group with her, you can't get on the Armory. At 5:30 in the afternoon, he told me to go get on a men's group, knowing that they sign up for a men's group at 3:30 in the afternoon. There have been problems with the lift, and they're saying that the White Buffalo doesn't go up to the Armory every day. That's why they can't take her.
The White Buffalo is?
The main bus that they use on the church group. With the wheelchair.
It has a wheelchair lift, yeah.
But the thing I explained to them is she can walk up the three stairs of the blue bus. Mm-hmm. Then after that passed, the excuse was, well, we have to lock down the wheelchair in whatever vehicle we carry it in. But neither one of the two vehicles, the one with the lift or the other vehicle that goes to the Armory, locks down her wheelchair. So
they never have.
Last night we were allowed to go to the Armory because the lift didn't work. I was told by one employee, from now on this winter we can go up to the Armory. I was told by another employee, as soon as the lift is done, she's going to be on a separate thing and I'm going to be on a separate thing.
Now, this sounds like not necessarily racial discrimination, but discrimination of disabled people. I want to make sure, not that one isn't as bad as the other. But I want to separate these complaints. Have you had any problems with what you consider to be racist attitudes or behaviors this year from any of the employees at the Homeless Services Center?
Yes, I have.
And have you filed complaints about those concerns?
I haven't filed any paper complaints. I've just been verbally going in. I go in and speak to them, and then I allow them the week to thank or coordinate or do whatever they need to do.
Did you speak to their superiors, or did you speak to them?
Right. I've been through three chains of command. And I'm just told the same thing, that we're not going to get into personalities.
And the nature of your complaints are?
In racist nature.
So for example, an example of one particular complaint would be?
The example of one particular complaint is the night I refused to go to the women's church group. I was told I would not be allowed to go to the Armory, and I was told to get on a men's group at 5:30 in the afternoon when they know the sign-up time is at 3:30.
Was this penalization?
As a result, I slept out on the streets. I'm not a camper. Mm-hmm. Where I come from, I live in a house.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not like normal for me. I don't have a tent. I wear clean clothes. I take showers every day.
Right.
You know, I am disabled as well. And they know all these things. There's letters in both offices to that effect.
Do you have any objection, either of you, to my playing this on Free Radio Santa Cruz publicly? Because it would, of course, put you in a public position. Although this time your words would go out in their entirety. So I want you to tell me what your thoughts are on this.
People need to know. Because the people who are living in their homes and going to work every day, they just don't understand. Unless you've had to go through this, you never really understand.
So, is there any reason, are you considering making these complaints in written form so that, there's a documented paper trail? That's one way to do it, so that you have dates and so forth.
The thing about all of that is going public brings retribution.
But this is going public, too.
I know, but this is off the lot. So it's one thing to do something here and then not get out in the world. And this is public, and this is very public, and this is the only way that I was willing to do it up until now.
The last time that I tried to succeed in getting fair treatment, I had a visit from the sheriff's department 2 weeks later.
How did you attempt to get fair treatment, and what was the nature of that subsequent visit?
The subsequent visit was I was a ghost for 24 hours. But I am not in any computer. I was abused physically. They tried to make me abandon my son at a motel. And
How did they first contact you? What was the nature? What did they say when they arrived?
It was 2 weeks after I had been on Channel 3 and talking about homelessness. And I had made comments about the landlord. Who was pricing me out of my apartment, and I told the public exactly what he was doing. by taking advantage of subsidized rents, not putting any money into the building, and causing unsanitary and health hazards. And, you know, it just roller coastered from there.
And so you were criticizing a landlord in essence, or?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I made the remark that there was a small percentage of landlords in Santa Cruz living off the backs of the poor and sick, and taking advantage of their situation, knowing that you're sick and you can't
respond.
You can't respond. The mind is willing, the body is not always willing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't be consistent physically.
So what was the response of the sheriffs? How did they respond to this?
Well, I was treated like a fool.
But I mean, what, let me put it this way, how did they first contact you?
I was at a motel. It was 2 weeks to the day I had lost my apartment. And the manager called and asked if we were going to pay for more time. I said, yes, my son is going to go cash his work check and pay for more time. And this was at 9 o'clock in the morning. My son got up, got dressed, went to go cash his check. At 10 o'clock in the morning, Santa Cruz PD showed up.
With what concern?
Saying that I was trespassing
on
the motel grounds at the Seabreeze Inn.
Had you paid your rent?
Yes, I was paid up.
Were you paid for that day?
I was paid up until 11 o'clock that morning.
And what officer was this who made this claim?
I don't know the names. They did not have their name tags on.
When was this?
This was on October 17th, the year before last.
And was it? Had you been staying at the motel for a period of time?
Ever since I lost the apartment, the Women's Crisis Center helped me out with a weekend there, and I paid for 2 weeks.
Had you been? How much more time did you have on your account?
Until 11 o'clock that morning.
And so, why do you think the police arrived early? And what did he say? Did you?
No, there was no given reason. There was no good cause.
And so then what happened?
They literally dragged me out of the room.
Were you alone or were there witnesses?
My son was there.
How old is your son?
He's 18 now. And he's in Stockton with his father now because I couldn't get a home.
So they dragged you out of the room and then what happened?
They drove me to a sheriff's department.
The sheriff's department or the Santa Cruz Police Department?
I'm not sure. It was orange. And
jail?
It was a jail. They put me in a holding cell until... they put me in a holding cell, and there was always two deputies on me at all times.
What did they speak to you?
They said awful things that I won't repeat.
Give me some indication. We're a free radio station. You can say fuck if you wish.
Well, they, along with cursing, they were physically abusing me by taking my arms and twisting them up and behind me, and slapping me and kicking at me and dragging me across the floor. And they did this until 11 a.m. until 1:30 a.m. the next morning.
And these are the same two deputies, or was it change in personnel?
There was change in personnel. At the end of the evening, when it was finally over, this one man attacked me again, a sheriff's deputy. That's when I got angry and I asked him, you know, if he got off on it and if he went home and did this to his wife, did she like it? And I attacked his manhood. You know, I just snapped.
What are the names of any of these deputies?
I'll never forget their faces. I don't know the names.
Did you ever try to file complaints with Sheriff Mark Tracy?
No. I didn't want another visit.
And what was the nature of their abuse? I mean, did they say to you what was on their minds?
No.
Do you have any indication yourself as to what it was about?
No. Well, I always thought it was retaliation from the landlord for going on the local TV channel and talking about him the way I did.
So you were released when?
It was around 1:30 in the morning, and he had a red phone on the outside wall. I called 911 because I was getting hypothermia. I was in a pair of shorts and a t-shirt in a wheelchair.
On October 18th?
On October 18th.
1998?
Yes. And a police officer showed up, but he wouldn't come anywhere near me. What he did was he called a cab, paid for the cab, paid for one night at the Pacific Inn, motel, wouldn't take me to the emergency room as I asked, ran all the bruises and lumps and bumps were fresh, and at 7:30 the next morning the motel chased me out in the street.
Did you attempt at that time to either go to the media, talk to any authorities at all, or make a public statement?
There was an advertisement on the windows of the local TV station on Pacific Avenue, and I called them, and I told them that I was afraid to say anything to anybody because I didn't want any more retaliation visits. But I did give them the whole complete story, times, dates.
You know who you spoke to?
All I remember is that it was a woman who had a number listed on the window.
Community television?
Community television. Mm-hmm. And I called her before I left town.
And what did she do?
She wrote down my story.
Did she ever put it out on the television as far as you know?
I don't have any idea because I didn't stay around to find out.
Did she ever get back to you?
No.
What did you do then? Did you move to another place?
I was terrified. I left.
Where did you go?
We went all over trying to find housing.
In the county or outside the county?
Outside the county.
And when did you return to Santa Cruz?
2 weeks ago.
6 weeks.
6 weeks?
6 weeks ago you returned.
Well, I'm a little nervous here. 6 weeks ago, and...
Welcome back.
I'm glad to be back. I'm a lot stronger emotionally now about it.
Come on the radio show and talk about this personally. I have a show on Sunday from 11 to 1:30. The trouble is, of course, that we're not... It's not handicapped stuff. It's in a private house, and it's up a set of stairs, so that's not going to be easy to do. But I think I'll do, with your permission, if you want, is I'll play this tape on Sunday between 11 and 1:30 on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
That would be all right.
Okay.
That would be fine.
And be advised, if these people did this a year ago, it's possible they may do it again. And if they do, I want you to call me at the number at the bottom of that flyer. I can't protect you, but I can publicize what happens. 423-HUFF is the number at the bottom of that flyer, which is 4833-4234.
Yeah, you know, I don't want them to retaliate against me or Tim because he's with me or anybody else who's around me and tries to help,
I
you know.
I can't guarantee that. So,
also, what I would ask is that a portion of the state be played for the board of directors concerning the shelter here so that they can hear once again what's going on.
Okay, I think that's... I can do that. They're more likely to be able to hear to read a written report faster.
That's
so
fine.
If you can write up a brief report of the times and dates of what happened when, in terms of your complaint, and pass it on to them, that would probably be useful. And keep a copy of it for yourself and for us.
The thing is, how do I get to them? You know.
What you do with that is, you write it up, make copies, walk into the main office of Ken Cole, hand it to him, and say, I want this to go to the board of directors. And he actually is the one who's supposed to look at personnel complaints first. Okay. He will look it over, presumably he will talk to the personnel involved, and then he will come back to you and ask about satisfactory. If he does not do this, I want you to call me at 423-HUFF. That's the number at the bottom of that flyer that I think I gave you.
Yes, yeah.
That she has. And
we still want to consider whether we want to put anything in actual writing right now. We want to see what's going to happen with this.
Okay, remember that this is a radio station. Probably nothing is going to happen with this one way or the other.
I'm talking about in terms of any retaliation. I'm not expecting anything
that I don't
other than that in public awareness.
Right. I've heard of one instance of somebody being retaliated against recently.
Well, here there's all kind of subtle retaliation.
Okay. Well, I'll do it then and we'll see what happens, if that's what you'd like.
I'd like that, please.
What's he talking about?
The TV show you were talking, what's your name again?
Pamela Lee.
I'm sorry, Pamela. Yeah, I heard your name, that's right. And you were on Voices from the Village discussing these issues.
Right.
I think you were one of the few good people on that show, as I remember hearing about it. I don't think I saw it because I don't have community television.
Yeah, it caused quite an uproar. I got a lot of comments from it. My neighbors.
Well, maybe I want to be interviewed on Becky's show. Becky does a TV show and it'll be like a one-to-one interview. What do you think, Becky?
And that was an interview with Pamela and Tim out at the Homeless Services Center, initially concerning complaints against the staff, specifically Papa John, a worker out there for some years, and then later talking about Pamela Lee's treatment from her perspective at the hands of the Sheriff's Department. She feels in retaliation for a public denunciation she made of her landlord on Voices from the Village, a community television program back in 1998. We have not contacted the sheriff's department, nor do we know the name of the landlord. This is simply an interview which we took out at the Homeless Services Center about 2 or 3 weeks ago. As you can hear, we played it not on Sunday, but today, Thursday, January 20th. So we're a little bit behind schedule, as usual. For those who are listening in, I know we have a couple folks planning to call in. I wanted to mention that around the issue of the sleeping ban, which affects a lot of homeless people who don't even use the Homeless Services Center, who can't use the Armory because the Armory has a maximum capacity of 100 in the winter, and of course there are 700 to 1,500 homeless people out there. The sleeping ban, which is now being ignored by the City Council in spite of prestigious urgings from its own $10,000 Homeless Issues Task Force, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, the Community Action Board, Citizens of Conscience throughout the city, and of course the police department's reports now, of course, document 51 beatings last year of homeless people, not necessarily sleeping homeless people, but certainly some of them. The most notorious beating was, of course, of Joe Barker, and the only beating that I've heard of that involved a conviction or even an arrest by the police. That was the case of Aaron Birch beating up Joe Barker, who was again beaten later in the year by apparently someone else, because I think Birch was in jail at that point. We have found that there's been no action on the sleeping ban, except, of course, from those in the private sector. And the private sector, interestingly enough, is making moves the public sector won't. The city council, for example, will not respond to. One move is by a strange move from our point of view, but welcome from Chamber of Commerce CEO Michael Schmidt, who on the first city council meeting of the year on January 11th, when the Homeless Issues Task Force presented its midterm report, emailed the city council publicly that he favored immediate emergency safe zones for homeless people to sleep in because of the violence. He could say publicly what apparently every single city council member, including the most liberal, Mayor Sugar, would not. Outrageous, considering the kinds of campaign promises made the year before, but typical of politicians. And in a sense, I suppose, to the jaded and cynical, no surprise. Peter Eberle, head of the Downtown Association, executive director, that is, voted unanimously with the Homeless Issues Task Force a month prior to that, on December 6th, to urge the council to suspend the camping and sleeping bans pending the setting up of safe zones. No public response from Mayor Keith Sugar. No word from Chris Crone. No golden-toned utterances from Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice. Not even the sound of Catherine Byer's hands ringing or Michael Rotkin's fine rationalizations resounding through the chambers. We didn't hear any of that. We just heard nothing on that subject, except perhaps if you happen to be outside, the pain of people getting beaten up and police essentially either choosing to do nothing about it or essentially not having the resources, not being in a position to do something about it, because homeless people are being put into a vulnerable position through laws like the sleeping ban, which tends to discourage them from sleeping more safely in groups and in more visible public places. Anyway, Schmidt came out for safe zones. So did Peter Eberle. And David Silva and a number of other people, including, I understand now, some folks in religious denominations and students up at the university, are beginning what's called a rolling fast. I'm going to read you David Silva's statement. I'm asking people to sign up for 1 day of fast from either food or sleep or both. The rolling fast is until March 1st. In January, members of the religious community are fasting from supper, the month of January, and from supper and lunch, the month of February, and then from all solids, starting March 1st. The purpose is to get the City Council to remove the sleeping sections from the camping ordinance. And this is a much more minor, I'm interjecting now my thought in the middle of David's statement, this is a much more minor proposal, a much less extreme or militant proposal than what the Homeless Issues Task Force, the $10,000 blue ribbon commission that the City Council appointed, has urged them to do. They wanted the entire camping ordinance thrown out. This one just says let them sleep somewhere. They don't have permission to put up a tent. It would be illegal for them to do that, but please let them sleep without being arrested. I mean, it's really kind of the most minimal human rights protection you can imagine. But, you know, it certainly is that. It does state don't arrest people for sleeping. Arrest them if they dare to put a tent up. I mean, hey, that's carrying things a little too far. But certainly don't arrest them for sleeping. The purpose is to get, and I continue with David Silva's statement, the city council to remove the sleeping sections from the camping ordinance. The rolling fast is to show community support for those who are fasting. The goal is to have 18 people ready for a full fast by March. 18 homeless people died in 1999, a Santa Cruz record. If you are interested in fasting for more than one day or can carry the sign up for the rolling fast around, it would be a great help. We have about 30 people so far for the rolling fast. The idea is to pick a day and then call City Hall the next day and report to the mayor and full council your results. You can sign up for the rolling fast by calling, David doesn't give his number here, so I'm going to give mine at HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF. Give a call to 423-HUFF, and you can sign up for the rolling fast. Also listening to us on the air, I hope, is one person who's not waiting for the rolling fast. That's Roxana Kistapache. She began fasting 8 days ago, actually 9 days ago now, when she became so sick to her stomach at City Council, I guess, that was on January 11th, that she felt she could never eat again. I think that she simply decided something had to be done when the City Council was being told there was a massive outbreak of brutality against the homeless, but they wouldn't even talk about human rights for the homeless in terms of the city's own hate crimes, the hateful legislation, the sleeping ban, that makes the very act of sleeping a crime. Preposterous, you might say, but true. Very, very strange. So she may be calling in. That's Roxanne, and if she does, we will immediately take that call. And you may be calling in, too, because we do have open phone lines, 427-3772 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, and that's what you're listening to, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and this is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We broadcast for 2 hours between 6 and 8 every Thursday and 11 and 1:30 in the afternoon every Sunday. So give us a call, 427-3772. And as an added bonus, I'm going to be playing Phil Oakes songs never before aired on any radio station I'm aware of. These are straight from the vaults of the Broadside tapes, finally gotten from folk singer Mark Levy, our local folk singer, at gunpoint. Actually, no, it was more at at giggle point. But in any case, we got this tape, and it's great stuff. Some Phil Oakes, the folk singer from the 60s and 70s that you never heard played before. It's some of it's a little primitive because these are tapes from a kind of a very low-tech studio, but they're still quite audible and quite good. So give us a call and stay tuned.
Here I am, 10 years have I. Watch me run, watch me play, watch me cry. Time has no time, the world is mine, and it takes 10 years for a year to go by. Here I am, now 21, learned all I need for a life that's just begun. I know the rules, old men are fools, and it takes 7 years for a year to be done. Here I am, past 42, all that I know now, if only then I do. Trick by time, now I find that it takes just a year for a year to be through. Here I am, as old as old. All saints have been said, all stories have been told. But by time, the greatest crime is to live less than a year when a year has unrolled. Less than a year when a year has unrolled.
All those in favor of the low-power FM item signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Aye. So noted. The ayes have it. The item is adopted. I, too, would like to thank...
And with that, the Federal Communications Commission, for the first time in, is it 10 or 15 years? I'll find out.
22
years. That's the V-Man, folks. I have a distinguished guest in the studio with us today. Much maligned in some quarters, but praised in others. That's Vinny, who has his own show on...
Wednesday nights, 9 p.m., Rockin' the Boat, right here at Free Radio Santa Cruz.
And Vinny is not just one of your wild and crazy anarchistic piraticals. He's also probably the most educated person on the subject of pirate radio, free radio, micropower broadcasting, well, certainly in the Santa Cruz area, perhaps even further.
I wouldn't go that far.
You're natural.
We have a genius out in Pleasure Point who may be tuned in tonight, Mr. Ted Koopman, who's well-versed on the subject.
Hey, Ted, call in and tell Vinny he's wrong. He's the man. We can have a praise contest, a potlatch here. Anyway, the reason I have you on the air, Vinny, is that two important things happened in the last 2 weeks. The first, of course, you just heard on the air, the FCC's vote, which will, I guess, once more open micropower to some kind of legal status and licensing status. And the second, of course, is the raid on free radio, which now puts free radio under the threat of legal action. And I guess, which of those issues do you want to talk about first?
Well, we could talk a little bit about what you termed a raid, what I called a visit, an intimidation visit by Mr. William Zeers last Friday, the 14th. Of January. We were visited at 4 p.m. here at the studios of Free Radio, and like I said, our wonderful San Francisco field office FCC enforcement specialist William R. Zeers came out to the studios to inform us what we have already known for the last 5 years, that we are broadcasting without a license. I had the wonderful pleasure of encountering Mr. Zeers in the driveway of the home where the radio station is located, and I had witnessed him staring up at the roof and looking at our antenna and taking notes and looking at license plates of cars, and so I walked outside of the house and said, "Hey, what can I do for you?" And he immediately approached me asking if this was where the radio is, and I said, "Do you have a search warrant?" And as I was walking back towards the house, he said, "This must be where it is," as he noted my print on the back of my sweatshirt that says Free Radio Santa Cruz.
You're wearing the same sweatshirt, it looks like.
I am. You can always usually catch me in one of these.
It has a fine hand. It looks like of a person of color, I might add. Maybe it's just a colored sweatshirt.
And so anyway, he informed me that he had some paperwork, and I did not accept the paperwork, but he left it on the mailbox anyway. I went into the house to get a tape recorder and came back out to find Mr. Zeers still playing, trying to write down some of the numbers off of the license plates of cars in the area. And I informed him that he was trespassing and that if he did not leave the area, I would notify the police that he was trespassing. And I was trying to be as cordial as possible. The rest of this is on tape. And once I produced a tape recorder, made no comments whatsoever to me. As I followed him around the front of the house on the sidewalk, he was no longer trespassing, he finally turned around and snapped a few photographs of me. And I decided that I didn't really want my photo taken, so I went back inside and waited. And then I realized, hey, wait a minute, he's already got my photo. What do I got to lose? He knows who I am. So I went back out again for a second, third time, I guess, and followed him around the corner where his vehicle was parked. And I recorded the license of that, which was R40556, I believe. It's up there on this story, but I can get that to you later.
Have you succeeded in tracking down his car and assassin? No, just kidding.
Well, we did place a...
putting a pie in his car as a gift, perhaps.
Unfortunately, no fun like that. We managed to get a photograph or two of his vehicle as he pulled away, though. And unfortunately, I had my photo taken, and he left behind some paperwork that informed us, like I said, that we're broadcasting without a license. And this came 6 days prior to this vote that we had this morning out in Washington, D.C. at the 5-person Federal Communications Commission.
Now, what was this vote, Vinny? What did it consist?
Well, okay, there's been, for over a year now, the FCC had issued a notice of proposed rulemaking back in January 28th of 1999, and this was a notice that basically states that they were planning on changing the rule in regards to offering licenses for radio stations that operate under 100 watts of power.
And that's us. We're at 40, right?
Yeah, we're at a booming 40 watts here.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't done this since 1978 due to pressure from the National Association of Broadcasters, National Public Radio, the Corporation for Public Radio, for Public Broadcasting, and a whole host of others who had lobbied the FCC to do away with the 100 watts or less, what they called a Class D FM license. And they said that it was not an efficient use of the bandwidth, and that to space it out, it would be better for NPR to have, you know, a national system where they can have, you know, local radio stations in almost every community that they could, you know, have a satellite feed to. And so that's what the FCC did.
Now, did they take advantage of this? Did national NPR take advantage and start expanding immediately into these
previous
places?
Well, it seems that they have, yeah. We have a lot more NPR programming all over the place due to this. And it did away with most of your local programming. And over that period of 22 years, it's gotten worse and worse as the media industry becomes ever more consolidated and gets swallowed up by fewer and fewer people. I mean, we just had a merger recently with AOL and Time Warner, two of the biggest, creating probably the biggest media monopoly in the world today right now. And of course, Time Warner recently, but before that, bought Turner, and it just goes on and on. It's just like smaller and smaller. So we have like the big five people that own most of about 90% of the media outlets in this country. And you know, and this is what has led up to this situation where we've had people going on the air with these relatively low powered radio stations that are easy and affordable to put on the air.
Affordable meaning about what, $1,000 to
Yeah, for a station like ours, initially the equipment probably cost about $1,000, and it takes its toll over time. You have to pay rent and you have to upkeep equipment, but just to be on the air initially, it's about $1,000.
And how many stations do you estimate are in the United States of this sort?
At this time, probably over 400 to 500.
And there, for 22 years, or for 21 years, the FCC apparently had no interest in resuming these Class D licenses or allowing any legal status whatsoever for folks under 100 watts. What do you think has changed their mind?
I think it is, you know, the amount of public pressure put on the FCC by citizens like ourselves who have engaged in this type of broadcasting in, you know, ever larger numbers. As, you know, as Stephen Dunifer went on the air and brought his case to federal court, it empowered people to go on the air and to say, you know, they looked at his example and saw that he was winning in federal court and decided to go on the air.
Stephen Dunifer, who of course is the grand old man of Free Radio Berkeley, which I guess hasn't really gone on the air, but a substitute station.
Yeah, Berkeley Liberation Radio has reclaimed 104.1 megahertz FM up mm-hmm. in Berkeley.
But they're still broadcasting illegally. Of course,
yes, they are.
Right?
Yes, they are. And it's unfortunate because now we no longer have the excuse of, well, they don't offer these licenses for these types of stations. And as this vote came in today, as a matter of fact, I want to talk a little bit about the vote. What exactly was it that they passed? Well, from their press release, I'm going to excerpt parts of this. FCC approves new non-commercial low-power FM radio service, date January 20th, 2000, Washington, D.C. The FCC today voted to create a class of radio stations designed to serve very localized communities or underrepresented groups within communities by authorizing two new classes of non-commercial low-power FM radio service. In authorizing the new services, the first being LP100, with power from 50 to 100 watts and a service radius of their estimates about 3.5 miles, and the second class, LP10, with power from 1 to 10 watts and a service radius of about 1 to 2 miles. The commission said it is adopting interference protection requirements based on distance separation, blah, 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 and it goes on. It talks a little bit about enhancing community-oriented radio broadcasts and the need for, you know, new voices on the air.
What about 10 to 50 watts? That seems to be conspicuously absent there.
Exactly.
So what happens to us?
Exactly. We just vanish and disappear. Well, that brings me to another point here that's buried deep in the news release here. When they go on about who will be eligible for these licenses, and I'm going to read directly from this news release. Eligible licensees will be subject to the same character qualifications as are currently applied to full-power licensees. The commission said that entities that had broadcast without a license in the past could apply for low-power FM licenses if they certify, one, that they had voluntarily ceased engaging in unlicensed operations no later than February 26, 1999, without specific direction from the FCC, or two, that they had ceased engaging in unlicensed operations within 24 hours of being advised by the commission to do so.
Oops, looks like we're out of luck here at Free Radio.
Entities like ourselves who continued illegal broadcasting will be ineligible for any broadcast license.
Again, man. What can I say?
Then let's talk a bit about what this service will be.
Well, wouldn't it be eligible at all, even between 10 and 450 watts, even if we had gone off the air?
Apparently not. We would probably have to upgrade our...
Upgrade or downgrade.
Yeah, one or the other. We could take away our power booster and just go with 1 watt, I guess. Let's talk about a little bit about what it is that this license will consist of. Again, they talk a lot of fluff about creating diversity and creating opportunities for new voices and blah, 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 a lot of fluff. And they talk a lot about local ownership. These licenses, licensees will be limited to local entities certifying that they are physically headquartered, campused, or have 75% of their board members residing within 10 miles of the station. During this time, they talk about the licenses will be 8-year licenses with renewable terms. These licenses will not be transferable. For the first 2 years, no entity will be permitted to operate more than one LPFM station. After the second year, eligible entities will be able to own up to 5 stations nationwide, and after 3 years, up to 10 stations nationwide. The commission will announce in a subsequent public notice a designated 5-day filing window for LP100 applications after the effective date of the low-power FM order, that being today, which will be 60 days publication of this order in the Federal Register. So we're looking at a couple of months here before they actually start accepting even applications for some of these new class of license.
Isn't this, I'll be the devil's advocate here, Vinny. Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't this a good thing? I mean, here we have, you've been yapping and moaning and complaining and getting city council resolutions and barking and barfing all over the airwaves, make us legal. And here they are, they're going to let you be legal. Okay, you got to boost your signal, go down and, you know, do a little fundraising, make your signal, what is it, you have to be 150 watts.
Yeah.
Or, get more realistic, you know, let your head shrink a bit, stop being so grandiose, get down to 1 or 10 watts. So, you know, what's the problem?
Well, one of the problems I already went into, and that is the eligibility requirements, whereas so-called pirates or people who have not gone off the air when asked to do so by the FCC will not even be considered. The same people, the very people who put this issue on their plate at all, you know, they would not be even issuing these licenses if it wasn't for people like us nationwide going on the air continuously, you know, without any worries of our own. Personal liberties, as well as, you know, possible arrest of our equipment. It is us who put this issue on their plate, and now we're being left out. We don't even have our fingers in the pie because they made us wash our hands, essentially.
Sounds a little like the evicting the Dolphin Lee people after they had stopped the Beach Flats redevelopment.
And the other problem with this, to answer your question fully, this is, again, word for word, again, out of this news release. This is the other problem that we have with this idea of licensing low-power radio. LPFM stations will be required to broadcast a minimum of 36 hours per week, the same requirement imposed on full-power non-commercial educational licensees. They will be subject to statutory rules such as sponsorship identification, political programming, prohibitions of airing obscene or indecent programming,
shit,
and requirements to provide periodic call sign announcements, and will be required to participate in the National Emergency Alert
System. How about
system.
The National Aerobic System? Would we have to do little exercises, perhaps?
Well, we might. Get the air going.
So, in other words, you have to send in a list of programming to have it okayed by the FCC? Well, that's encouraging. I always wanted to be part of a bigger kind of corporate organization. I've always had that desire.
Well, now, you know, we had all this coverage in the Metro talking about management, and, you know, here we have, right from the horse's mouth from the FCC, they talk about board members, you know, being locally designated as board members. It's kind of ironic. So this is not what we fought for. You know, this takes away our whole argument of access to the airwaves for poor people. Sure, they might have a real easy filing system. It may be just a one-page form you fill out, maybe a $12 filing fee. You know, we understand they got to cover their administrative costs something, you know, somewhat, but this is not what it is about. You know, we want free speech. We've proven without a license that we can operate without interfering with any existing frequencies. We are already on what they call the third adjacent channel. That's one of the things I didn't get into, is some of the technical aspects of this. The licenses that they will grant to low power radio stations are what they call third adjacent channel. And we're already a third adjacent channel. I mean, because the nearest full power station is 96.9, and we're at 96.3, which makes us a third adjacent channel. The first adjacent would be either 97.1 or 96.7, and then the second adjacent channel would be either 97.3 or 96.5, and the third adjacent channel would be 97.5 or 96.3, and that's where we are. We're a third adjacent channel.
I hope you're following this. If you're not, we'll be running through this again about three or four more times before the show is over, so get your notebooks. The point is, however, that free radio, you're saying, is you, as certainly a longtime broadcaster, are, I guess, more disappointed with this decision than you were when you first saw it.
I'm not just more disappointed. I am outraged. I am completely, I feel sold out. Like, the FCC took all this wonderful energy out of our movement, and now they're co-opting everything that we've worked for, and they're going to leave us out of the process. Well, I say, fuck the FCC. We're staying on the air. Fuck them. We're not even going to bother applying for one of these licenses. First of all, we're not eligible. Second of all, it's not worth getting, because once we sign on the dotted line, we give them the authority to come into our station without a warrant, and we also give them the authority to regulate us and tell us what we can say, when we can say it, how many times a day we have to say certain things, what kind of programming to put on the air. There's requirements for 75% of the programming to be locally oriented, which I have no problem with, because most of it is already locally oriented. But
the question is, who's the judge of these things?
Right.
And also, the phrase obscene and indecent begins to worry me. I mean, I know some programs, such as, drunken revelry on the air that's unrelated to anything other than wild and crazy shit, I regard as occasionally obscene, but certainly not indecent. And much of what I do, many people regard as indecent. But you know, I mean, indecent is the kind of word that can ban Tropic of Cancer, Henry Miller's books and other books on the air, which is such a broad swath that it's actually been ruled unconstitutional in certain other contexts.
Well, we would have to get rid of alt.talk right off the bat. You know, if you want to talk about indecency, they have a program on Wednesday evenings at 6 o'clock, and they talk about sex. It's about BDSM, and you know, would that be considered indecent under these new guidelines?
I wonder that, but titillating as well.
Exactly. We have to cut half of our programs right off the bat. And in terms of all this controversy surrounding Merlin, well, I mean, I think under these new rules, he would be the first one off the air.
Merlin, of course, for those of you who don't know, is a programmer who has recently been, dumped by the collective because of, I'll let Vinny explain it. I wasn't present at the...
I'd really rather, I mean, just to since you brought it up, I guess I brought it up, but I didn't really want to get into that issue, but... You know, I mean, this brings up that issue because some people in the community are saying, well, we're doing the same thing. We're trying to regulate the content of somebody's speech, because we have stories in the Metro saying that Merlin was let go for on-air comments about lesbians and the porn industry. While he did make some of those, unbelievably stupid comments on the air, that wasn't the reason that he was asked to not come back to do a show. In fact, the reason was for repeated violations of policy here. And it's funny because, you know, here I am complaining about policies that the FCC just mandated, but...
What kind of policies are you talking about?
I'm talking about policies that Free Radio has established in order to maintain a broadcast facility. We had to kowtow a little bit to the household that we are under, and to the roof that we live under, and the people that live here asked us not to have more than 4 guests in the studio at any one time. And if there was any need to have more than 4 people in the studio, then they would have to clear that ahead of time with the household. Merlin repeatedly violated that policy over and over again, and he was asked on the last day of his program to get rid of some of the people. He had 8 people in here, twice the amount that was supposed to be in here. It was really loud, and he was asked to let some of those people out and have them come back at another time. Or just schedule it differently. If he has a three-hour show, if he wants to have eight people, he should schedule two people for the first hour, two people for the second hour, and, you know, four people for the third hour.
Actually, normal listeners to Bathroom Spares Broadsides might not be as interested in this as...
That's true, you're right.
But nonetheless, it is a free speech issue, and certainly when we're talking about free speech in our own house or in our own station, it's important to get into it. And you are, in fact, Vinny, giving us those particular reasons why Merlin was... told that he wasn't welcome in the collective anymore. It wasn't a broadcaster. And it didn't have to do with the content of his speech. It had to do with violating, consciously and repeatedly violating, the rules of the household. I don't know the facts of this issue, so Merlin, if you're listening, feel free to call in to defend yourself, any defenders of Merlin. But again, our show is primarily concerned with low-income, the rights of people on the street. And so I am sensitive to issues of censorship. I've taken issue with the collective, which sometimes takes a strong stand on actual speech. If a Nazi broadcaster comes on, I doubt, however nice he is to the people in the household, you're going to probably want him out of here, at least as a regular broadcaster.
Exactly.
So you do have certain standards on that. You're not sort of content neutral at the collective.
No. Well, our position is that there's enough room on the dial, and that these stations are inexpensive enough for people that want to have these kinds of stations to organize amongst themselves and get a station, you know? I would fully support that. And like Merlin said, he's going to start a new radio station with some of his local band friends, and it's just going to be dedicated to music. Then fine. I fully support that. You know, like I said on my own show, I'll throw in the first dollar to get the equipment. That's my biggest argument for that kind of, for that, you know? Just people always say, you know, just because it's pirate radio, you know, we shouldn't have any rules because it's illegal, but that doesn't make
it... Aye, matey, but even pirates have their rules.
Well, you know, we have to maintain some kind of safety here. You know, it's a threat to the station when one person is ruining it for everybody, and it threatens, and the household threatens to kick the radio station out because of one person repeatedly violating policy.
Incoming call. Let's see if we've got any kind of response from the public on this issue. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Jim, who is sometimes called Smegma.
Hello.
Hey, Smegma.
Hey, man. So, how strange. This whole, like, does anybody know exactly who the people around the table were when, like, the FCC was called something else previous to that?
A long, long time ago, back in 1920s.
Right, exactly.
They were called the Federal Radio Commission.
Right, the Federal Radio Commission. And that must have been, like, one of the best, like, in-group tete-a-tetes practically in American history. If any of those guys were smart and foresaw that these licenses they were acquiring for nothing at the beginning, and they were just basically carving up, you know, they were the representatives of networks. Of course, Sarnoff
right.
was the one. Sarnoff from CBS, I forget who the other two are. But they were, like, essentially inventing this entire space that now is, like, where most Americans spend most of their life with their heads stuck up its butt, you know?
Yeah, good point.
And like, it's incredible. It's like, and now the FCC has come out as opposed to something aiding public, you know, public, God only knows, they don't use the word free, but, you know, public, whatever, you know,
where airspace, free airspace.
Exactly, free airspace, something like that. Without that happening, you know, they're coming back as like the bad guy again. They're like the fascist bad guy moving in. And it's amazing, but boggles my mind.
Well, thank you, caller. Is there more you want to say on this?
I just wanted to mention the weird fact that, like, Vinny witnessed me getting jumped by those skinhead guys at the benefit about a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that was immediately after I had written an article to City on the Hill Press talking about Trollbusters.
Mm-hmm. We're actually going to be talking about more of that tonight. There was a
great,
very interesting story that came out on the front page of the Sentinel about 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago.
Good. It's just you know, sometimes you have like a set of weird coincidences in your life, and you're almost like, wow, forces way beyond me are moving through my whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a good thing, and keep up the good work, guys. You know, I mean, I'm on the boat. I hope.
Thank you.
So see y'all later.
All right.
Bye.
It's funny you mentioned the boat. I was just thinking that. That might have to be our next recourse, is to actually go out on a ship to be able to broadcast without a license and actually become pirate radio, because with this visit that we had and now with this new rule change, I wouldn't be surprised if we do get another knock very soon from the FCC with a couple of U.S. Marshals with a search warrant and a seizure warrant in their hands. So we're going to have to get real creative in this community. We might have to go back to the bike cart days. But whatever happens, I can guarantee you one thing. We will not get a license, we will not be silenced, and we will remain on the air at all costs. However, for people that are interested, I want to wrap this up because you only have about an hour left, and I know you got a lot to get into here, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. and I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about this.
Go ahead, Vinny.
For people interested in getting a license from the FCC, the Fascist Communications Control, Federal Communications Commission, subsequent information on the low-power FM application process will be available on the FCC's website, www.fcc.gov, and you can search around the Mass Media Bureau and look for LPFM. Or interested parties can call the FCC's toll-free telephone number. Merlin, if you're out there, get your pen and file for that license. 1-888-CALL-FCC. That's 1-888-225-5322. And you are tuned to Bathrooms, Piers, Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, operating without a license and no longer with the excuse of they don't offer licenses for this kind of radio station.
They still don't. 10 to 50, no licenses.
Good point. You got a point there. I guess we still have an argument then.
Yeah. I think we have a lot better arguments than just that, but yeah, that's certainly one of them. Thank you, Vinny. You've been listening to the V-Man. He's regularly on Free Radio Santa Cruz Wednesdays at
9 p.m., rocking the boat.
And so tune in then, or just tune in at any time. You may find him lurking in the studio, keeping an eye on things, and keeping the old loop tapes rolling. Thank
also,
you,
quick mention, if I may plug, Club Cruise will be airing a program next week, I believe.
You're talking about the FCC interview, yeah. The interview with the Free Radio Santa Cruz interview about the FCC and about Free Radio. Yeah, that's on Club Cruise from 7 to 7:30. I believe it'll be, and I'm not sure if it's next week, Tuesday and Thursday, but it could well be, and I hope maybe I'll get a call from my producer who has more definite information on that. She also is the producer of that show, the Club Cruise show.
Right on. Well, thank you, Robert, for having me on tonight.
Thank you, sir.
Stay tuned, listeners.
About the dust bowl, maybe. Of course, we're all familiar with them. Woody Guthrie and Clint Bassett. Of course, Richard Bassett. And I was wondering whatever happened to the children's room. Dedicated towards the broadside. Their parents lost farms.
This gets more audible as we go along. Hang with us, folks.